Welcome to our special 7 questions edition of How to Win a Campaign. I'm Martin Diego Garcia, and you can find us at the Campaign Workshop on Instagram or on Threads. In this series, we're talking to some of our favorite authors, content creators, and influencers, and you'll find the 7 questions blog post that inspired this conversation at our website, thecampaignworkshop.com, or in our show notes. Today, I'm super excited about our guest, Katie Ballinger, who is a dear friend of mine. Katie has over 20 years of experience in social justice and political work. Throughout these years, she has worked with nonprofits and for-profit organizations, boards and staff teams, as well as coalitions and campaigns to align around a shared mission, build robust implementation plans, to engage and develop leaders, and deliver real success to the communities that they are serving. In 2015, Katie launched her own company, KDB Strategies LLC, which is a queer-owned business committed to equity and representation. KDB Strategies exists with the goal of bringing individuals and teams together to design actionable change. Katie, thanks so much for being here. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. So one of the questions we usually always ask folks when they're on with us is sort of where they got started. But I think this is really interesting because as folks in the queer community, like we often tell our coming out stories of coming into our own identities. But what I want to hear from you is over the 20 years of your work in social justice and political work, what got you started?
Well, you know, it's a really interesting question because it was all an accident. I actually had these dreams of being a professional musician and was training to be a professional flutist and had dreams of being in orchestras and all sorts of things. And I actually decided that life was going to be a little too competitive for me, but then somehow found my way into politics. So it's the greatest irony of my life. I'm not a musician because it was too competitive, but then I got into politics.
Well, this is why we connect is because I was also like going to go in like a theater path
Like
be in theater and also was like, that seems a lot harder than I think it's going to be. And so chose politics instead.
Yep. That must be why we connect so well. You know, I was just sort of looking for my next path, and I ended up stumbling upon an internship program when I was in college. And in the interview, I connected with the interviewer very deeply because I was just wrapping up a class with a professor who had run for Congress against our then Congresswoman, Tammy Baldwin. And we were talking about how this particular professor was a very challenging individual, and we really bonded over that. And so I did not even know that Tammy's congressional office was an option for this internship, but I got placed there and loved every minute of it and ended up going on to her campaign after that and just never looked back in terms of politics or my career.
That's fantastic. In your work in both, right, like the nonprofit space and the for-profit organizations with the board, staff teams, right, coalitions, how has that diversity of experience really shaped your approach, your strategy, right? Like your thought process behind what it means to create positive change?
Yeah. You know, working with so many different kinds of organizations and different kinds of people has done two things for me. One, I've really learned how to adapt and really think about every client is both a unicorn and similar. And so every client is working in their own environment, their own reality, their own landscape, their own challenges, and they need to feel heard and respected and valued wherever they're at, whatever they're doing. And also, there's some universal truths. People need to spend meaningful time together. They need help to communicate intentionally and effectively and in ways that really center their values and the impact that they want to have in the world. And so I've really brought those two things together. It's both knowing that people just really need help and they need help talking to each other and centering values, and you have to adapt to every single group of people and the unique intricacies of their world.
We hear that and sort of approach that work in a same lens. So like, as you were working with these similar unicorns, are there any sort of common principles or strategies that you have found to be more universally applicable sort of across the different sectors, topics, issues, sort of like individuals you're working with?
So I would say one of the most common themes is that people really struggle with how to communicate with each other. folks need a lot of help to figure out, particularly how to tackle the toughest of conversations, how to deliver feedback, how to create a space where folks can be honest and vulnerable with each other, how they can take a chance to innovate and create new opportunities for their work. And I think finally, just really seeing that every challenge that they encounter is actually an opportunity to make a change, either in how they do the work or in the impact of their work.
I mean, the communications piece is key, right? Like, you have worked with our team on communications, which we have been appreciative of. But I think you're right. I think every organization, because it's sort of this patchwork of individuals who all communicate differently, and it sometimes is constantly changing, right? To sort of keep a continued open dialogue about what that looks like and putting in systems is critically important.
Absolutely. Well, and I would also say, I really saw that the communication needs take center stage at the outset of the pandemic. When folks were moving to working home, when folks were terrified of what was going on in the world, and understandably so, I think folks actually need a lot more support to shift how they were communicating, to do more to actually honor the humanity of each other. I think we had a moment just as a society where we realized we are all vulnerable. We are all scared. Nobody knows exactly what the path forward is. And folks actually started to reach out for more help than I've seen in the past, which, you know, the circumstances were obviously challenging, but that was the opportunity. Folks took the time to think about, how can we do this work differently? And how can we be more real with each other? And I've seen that play out time and time again with my clients. And it's one of the most beautiful parts about my work, actually.
When we take the time to iron that stuff out, right, it allows us to then spend 90% of our time actually doing the work we want to be doing, then 80% of the time figuring out how to talk to each other.
Right. You know, somebody once said to me, the how is the what? And that really stuck with me. How we do the work is actually just as, if not more important than what the work is. Because if we're not intentional about how we do the work, we are just going to unwittingly reinforce or uphold the very systems that we're trying to dismantle in our work.
Yeah, 100%. So you and I also share another sort of passion and love for engaging and developing new leaders, right? And so I would love to hear from you, sort of what are the strategies that you employ to really nurture leadership within organizations, within communities of individuals that you are working with?
That is a great question. Yeah, I think three hallmarks of the strongest leaders that I've seen are honesty, transparency, and integrity. And those are often the hardest things when you're a leader, because I think the way that we traditionally look at leaders, it can be a very isolating experience for folks. You know, I work with, and I've been an executive director of nonprofits before, and those are some of the most terrifying positions to be in, because you have to have all the answers, or you at least feel, you can often feel like you have to have all the answers, and you have to be on for everybody, whether it's your board, your staff, the community you're serving, the media, so on. So I think that's really, really hard. So part of what I bring to my work is actually to model that behavior for the people that I am working with and the clients that I'm serving. And the more that I demonstrate honesty, vulnerability, and integrity, the more folks can actually match that and feel safer in doing it. And I think that's really key.
You already named some of the sort of main qualities that you look for. Are there ways in which you coach folks, right, allow for that space, allow for that vulnerability, in addition to sort of modeling as an example of you doing it, right? Like, are there other ways that you support leaders in feeling confident, feeling comfortable, feeling that level of vulnerability to be honest and transparent and have integrity?
Well, one of the things that I say to my clients a lot is that it's our responsibility as leaders to be kind, not nice. And what that means is, and I'm a Midwestern lady.
I was going to say.
So we're very vested in being nice. And that often, that's a fine and great intention. But I think a lot of times when we try to be nice, what we end up doing is actually not addressing the elephant in the room or not speaking directly to something. Or this can come out in passive aggressive ways or muddled communication. And so I work with folks, and particularly when I'm trying to support someone in how to manage a team or manage change, that it's not just about, we can't just be nice and make everyone always feel great, because that's actually not necessarily giving people a chance to understand, contribute, or change course. And that's actually the kindest thing that you can do for people. When you tell somebody that something's not going the way that you want it to, when you tell somebody that there's an opportunity for them to do better at their job or with their work, that's actually giving someone the chance to make a different choice, to learn and grow and to adapt. And that's how we, as individuals and as teams and organizations, can get better at our work.
Yeah, completely agree. Another thing that we usually talk through, particularly when we're talking to folks who have done as much work as you have done in the space, is how do you make a career in this space, right? Whether it's advocacy, policy, nonprofits, community change, et cetera. So what inspired you to launch your own business, KDB Strategies, back in 2015? And how has that journey been for you?
Well, I'm just going to give you my honest answer. And that is, there were two things that made me start my own consulting shop. And one was burnout and one was bad strategic planning consultants. I started this company when I was coming out of a 6-year tenure as the executive director of my state's LGBTQ plus advocacy organization. And it was a wonderful job and a wonderful opportunity to have a real impact. And I left every single thing out on the field and was really tired and exhausted and really wanted to figure out how I could create a new balance in my life. I still want to have an impact. I still want to do this work. And also, that's not the role that's the best for me as a human. That was one piece. And the other piece was the challenging strategic planning consultants. As a nonprofit ED and as a board chair of other organizations, I often was interviewing consultants to come in and support our organizations, add capacity, do a planning project, so on. I felt myself having to adapt our organizations to what the consultant's model was. I remember very clearly one particular strategic planning consultant, and we ended up for about a half an hour debating whether or not the organization I was with was in stage one or stage three of her planning process. And I just really walked away from that and other experiences saying, this is not the best use of my time and the best way that we can actually support our community. That at the end of the day, the more time that I spend with consultants who weren't giving me what support my team needed, that had a cost to it. And that cost was in delivering wins and improvements to the LGBTQ plus community. That was the community I was serving the most at the time. I wanted to do it differently, and I thought I could do it better. And that's really, I think, inspired the approach to how I do my consulting and how I support these organizations. They are all unique and special, and it's my job to adapt to what their needs are.
And so how has that journey been for you? I mean, next year it'll be 10 years.
I know. It's crazy to think how long it's been. The journey has been absolutely incredible. I am so fortunate to have worked with such amazing groups of people all across the country. I mean, your team included. I just have been really impressed and just humbled to be able to support such innovative, passionate leaders and organizations doing incredibly difficult, challenging work, and to do it through some of the most difficult times that our country has seen in a long time.
Yeah. So now the sort of goal, as you've put it, for KDB Strategy, right, is to bring individuals, teams, sort of communities together to design around actionable change. Talk to me a little bit about what does actionable change mean to you, and how do you really help guide the folks that you work with in achieving it?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing that I've really learned about my clients is that nobody comes to KDB Strategies because things are perfect. Their strategic plan has sunset. Their executive director left. The legislature has started attacking their community. Whatever it is, right? These folks are teams who need something, who need to fix something, who need to build something, who need to innovate. And so I really come at this work as a partnership and really look for folks who can be honest about what the biggest challenges are in order to, like I said before, turn those challenges into opportunities. I think that's been one of the most interesting sort of evolutions in the work, because I've seen so many different kinds of scenarios at this particular stage that there's not much that surprises me anymore in terms of what issues my clients are dealing with, or the fact that once I sort of get into the thick of it with a client, I'm going to uncover something. Organizational cultures are like onions. You peel back a layer, you find something underneath, you start working on that, and then you find something underneath that that needs to work on. And so I think a lot of times, you know, one of the things that I try to impart with my clients is that there are pieces of how we do the work that are just ongoing. You're never done working on your organizational culture. You're never done on your racial justice journey. You're never done figuring out how to be more impactful and more intentional and more equity focused in your work.
I mean, on that theme, are there through lines, sort of trends that you have seen in terms of like challenges that you have seen working across, right, again, a variety of different sort of groups, organizations, nonprofits, and how have you continued to sort of navigate to achieving that positive impact, right? I would imagine there's some sort of across the board things you've seen.
Well, I think one of the things that really, actually, it's a trend that excites me is that more and more of the folks that I work with are understanding the connection between how white supremacy, patriarchy, and capitalism show up in their day-to-day work together. And I think that's been one of the biggest evolutions that I've been seeing across the board, regardless of what issue or constituency or state or level, whether it's a local, state, or national, or even international nonprofit. That's been really wonderful to see, because I think folks are understanding more and more every day about how they have been and are still complicit, and really working to root those things out. And that has also opened up the door for folks needing more support, more education, more training, more facilitation, you know, all of the supports that go into that kind of really deeply transformative work. It's a lot, and it's a lot for organizations to take on. And it can also be a lot for organizations to absorb. And so I think that's the last piece I'll say here is I think I've really figured out that I have to work with my clients to determine what are they actually capable of taking on? Because you can't change everything all at once and still do your mission and still do your work and still be a human who is healthy and has, I don't even like to say work-life balance because it's not supposed to be 50-50, right? But to have a healthy relationship between your work and your personal life, it's helping folks figure out that it is a journey and how to break those steps up so that you can do all of the things at the same time and do it in a way that's also not going to burn your team out, or do it in such a way that's so aggressive that you actually end up causing harm, whether it's internally or externally.
Food for thought as folks, as our listeners are taking this in. In your journey, right, like, are there any specific sort of lessons or insights that you have gained throughout your career that you would share with our listeners in the area of social justice or political work as they are either starting off anew, right, continuing their career, maybe doing a little bit of a transition? Insights that you have for them?
One thing that someone said to me on my very first campaign, which was sort of mind-blowing to me and continues to be just something that I as a human am working on, which is just accepting the fact that I'm going to make mistakes at some point in time. Every one of us is going to make a mistake. We are human. and trying to avoid mistakes at all costs can actually create more mistakes, right? It's sort of accepting the fact that we're human and we're learning and we're growing. And there's going to be something that happens at some point where something's going to go off the rails or it's not going to come together the way that you want. And that there's no perfect solution to most of the problems that we encounter. And so I think what I've learned is that it's really important to be clear and grounded in the values. Who do I want to be in this world? Not just what do I want to do and accomplish, but who do I want to be while I'm doing it? And what is my purpose and role? Because I'm also one person. I can't change all of the things. So what's the thing that I bring where I can have the greatest impact that's in alignment with my values and that's going to allow me to learn, grow, and adapt as I go? And I think that's the biggest lesson that I'd want to impart with folks who are just starting out.
That piece of authenticity and owning your own power carries you through most of your career.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so now last question, which we ask everybody. Are there any sort of favorite podcasts, books, movies, TV shows that you're digging right now that you want to impart upon our listeners?
Sure. The book that I'm reading right now was a recommendation from Joe Fult, which is Culture Code by Daniel Coyle. And I am currently obsessed with it. And it's really bringing together a lot of the experiences and things that I've learned in real time in my work and putting some new context with it. So there's three elements of culture. There's building safety, there's finding your purpose, and there's sharing vulnerability. And I think those are things that have been baked into what I'm doing, and it's bringing new life and sort of reinvigorating some of my passion. So I would really recommend that folks check out Culture Code.
All right. Good to know. I'm going to put it on my list. Well, thank you. Thank you for joining us and for being here and for being the brilliant human you are doing the amazing work you're doing.
Well, thank you for having me. This is really fun. And I so appreciate the work that you all do, both with your clients and in doing this podcast series and digging into the humans behind the work. I think it's really extraordinary.
It's a lot of fun for me. I get to learn every time I have one of these conversations. So for our listeners, for more on this topic, be sure to check out the blog at thecampaignworkshop.com. If you want to hear more of these interviews, be sure to like, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And until next time, I'm Martin Diego Garcia, breaking down how to win a campaign.
How to Win a Campaign is Joe Fold, Martin Diego Garcia, Elizabeth Rowe, Phoebe Retta, Samantha Sondek, and Lauren Odom. Music by Danielle Pinto. Audio editing by Christopher Lang. Special thanks to the team at the Campaign Workshop. Please review, like, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.